You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, hanging out in the green room with David Goss, Bobby Warshaw, and Matt Doyle. It is Monday. Two of the four of us spent all weekend at a wedding. Therefore, we're blank slates, ready to be educated. Dave, that's you and me. I guess you were at the game on Sunday, Red Bulls, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have more to offer than I do.
I think naturally, just most often, I feel
wow.
Like that.
Oh, yeah. Just you went real casually feisty. Into that. Yeah, that was understated, Dave.
I bring a lot to the table.
Yeah, uh-huh.
My okay. Mom says that I'm great.
Yeah, your mom, you're your favorite. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You see where I'm at right now. My brain is just working extremely slowly. I'll get it revamped ahead of Thursday. 22 under 22 reveal show, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, has the top 10. We'll give those to you at 2 p.m. Eastern on MLS channels and Extra Time radio channels. 22 through 11 come out on Wednesday. We've made the change. No longer 24 under 24. It's 22 under 22 until we decide, for whatever reason, ideally that these academies are pumping out game changers, that 20 under 20 is our future. Ben Bear helped put this whole thing together. He will join us in the second segment, and we will reveal our ballots. So get ready for that. There is some surprise, some anger, some banter coming. I promise you that. One argument that I'm going to check out of for the rest of my life. You can rank your own list at MLSsoccer.com, so go do that. Done with the promos. Atlanta, New York. The handshake that wasn't. The memes that have been sprouted off this incredible win for the Red Bulls. The Supporters Shield race that's back up in the balance. All thanks to a 2-0 win for the red side of New York. Bobby, you were at this game. Mm-hmm. You made a stump speech afterward to Metro Fanatic TV. Is that who it is? It looked like your constituents were very interested. They were also out here like chanting F. Matt Doyle for those large periods.
Those are my people.
So, yeah, this was a huge win, and this
I
was an unexpected
so
win.
So much of their headspace. It's awesome. Hi, guys.
Tyler Adams, not playing. PWP, well, we know why he wasn't playing, not on the field. Pretty much everybody, including one Matt Doyle, tweeting out before, thought that this was going to be a multi-win or multi-goal win for Atlanta United, a coronation in the Shield race. It didn't happen that way. What happened?
Bobby?
This was the most exhilarating soccer game I've been to in a long time. I generally can watch soccer and feel no need to put on boots and try and play again. And I watched this game. I was like, dude, this looks like it's the most fun thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Here's the thing about the Red Bulls. If we generally agree that faster soccer is better soccer and faster soccer is harder soccer, the Red Bulls play the fastest soccer I've ever seen live, right? You know, it's hard to compare towards, you know, the Premier League and the Bundesliga, but in Major League Soccer.
Or the Ukrainian League.
You'll understand later.
In Major League Soccer, what Red Bulls do is they just make the game be played faster than a level that anybody else in this league can play at, including Atlanta United, right? Atlanta United, with all their stars and all their ability, just looked totally frazzled by the demands that Red Bulls put on them in that game.
I don't disagree. My disagreement is the broad assertion that faster soccer is better soccer or more effective soccer. For me, it's more about change of pace rather than pace. And that said, at the start of the year, it was all pace all the time for the Red Bulls under Jesse Marsh. And I thought that they were so good at that. The overview didn't even matter. In the second half of the year, Chris Armas has tried to add that change of pace. And I will admit, I have not been sold on it. And then we saw them bring it out against Atlanta. There was a moment there, maybe the 20th or 30th minute, where they were playing out of their back, and it was ping, 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 and they, you know, get a breaking out down the left-hand side, and they didn't get, like, a great chance out of it, but it was, it let Atlanta know that you're not going to be able to press this Red Bulls team successfully, like, they have more than one club in the bag. It did not make me want to lace up my boots and go out there and play like Bobby Warshaw. But it, from a neutral's point of view, it was a great game to watch, and it was a logistical victory for the Red Bulls. It wasn't just about tactics and your strategy. It was about having a team from the first team all the way down to the academy that's built to still keep its integrity even when you're missing your two most important players. Bradley Wright Phillips and Tyler Adams are still this team's two most important players. They went out and drilled.
I think it may have changed. I think between the two center backs and Kaku, because of this result and because of watching them play, who those most important players are may have changed, maybe not by a lot, and you're splitting hairs, but one of the things that I've talked about a lot this season you look at is, like, you talk about his name's Damien Perenal, by the way. Mm-hmm. I didn't really listen, but I kind of had, like, stumbled on some of that. I don't know what was going on with you guys and Matt Miazga, but what he talked about with that team, like, you had the right personnel for your system. And, Bobby, you talk about it all the time. Like, if you pick one system and you do it to an expert level, you'll be a good team. But to be a great team, you need to have quality and the right people in right positions. And I watched this game, and you were talking to me a little bit, Bobby, about what Atlanta did trying to push Almirón higher. And you look at it, when the Red Bulls press, there is sometimes a gap behind those central midfielders.
And we saw it early.
In front of the center backs, Almirón got that one breakaway.
That was it.
But they had players in Parker and Kamar Lawrence that could run down the fastest, most aggressive front line in the league. And they left gaps in places, whether it was stepping the whole back line up and allowing the ball to go over the top for Villalba or Joseph to chase, or allowing those center mids to step, and then Long and Parker switching off, stepping in and either blocking Almirón or tackling it off of him quickly, and Joseph. I don't think there's other teams in the league that can do that, because they can't one-on-one defend these guys in Atlanta. And they can't one-on-one beat them in a foot race if the ball goes over the top. Robles came out two or three times and played balls out from the top, but there aren't other teams in MLS that are capable of that. And I don't think the Red Bulls were capable of that in past years.
Right.
And now they have the personnel to make them be able to do that, even without Tyler Adams.
It was phenomenal to watch. Gus, you're spot on, man. They had Aaron Long and Tim Parker 1v1 at midfield with Tito Villalba and Joseph Martinez. When we talk about the different types of press, and some teams do a zonal press, pushing teams to a spot on the field and hitting them in the pocket. Red Bulls matched up 1v1, man. They had Kaku run it at Michael Parkhurst in the middle. They had Daniel Royer sprint at Jeff Lernowitz on the left. Kamara Lawrence would run up to Julian Gressel. Everyone was 1v1. And Aaron Long was isolated. It was so incredible to watch the bravery that these Red Bulls players approach this game with and then winning their battles.
Aaron Long, by the way, got a call up with the U.S. national team. 24-man roster for Dave Sarakin just came out. So we'll get to that at the end of the segment along with Sam Stashkel on the Albert Rusnak situation. He did not board the RSL flight to Kansas City. He made it to Kansas City. He did not start. He did get a new contract. So seven figures up in the bank account. That's always extremely nice. Atlanta United side. I mean, we're praising the Red Bulls, and, you know, I watch the highlights, read all the coverage, listen to you guys talk about it, and it seems clear. Red Bulls now within 1 point of Atlanta United at the top of Supporters Shield. They each have 3 games left. Atlanta's got New England and Chicago at home. Then they're at Toronto FC. Meanwhile, the Red Bulls at San Jose, 3 points. At Philly, up in the air. Versus Orlando, 3 points.
It should be.
KC went there and won 5-1. It should be.
There are two teams that Atlanta United have yet to beat in MLS. One is the Red Bulls, and the other is Toronto FC. And if they go, if Atlanta claims 6 more points. They have a nice 69 points on the season, and they go into that final game of the year looking for a win or a draw, a result against Toronto in Toronto to be the first team to break 70 points. Toronto doesn't want them to get that. I know Toronto's season is done, but we saw what they can do this weekend now that they're mostly healthy.
Please give us that game. Give us that game with Toronto fighting for playoffs.
Josie came off after 18.
Is it mostly healthy? Yeah. Drew Moore is still out as well. But this is Atlanta had a 28-3 lead in the Supporters Shield race. Now it's the fourth quarter.
Yikes.
Can we take a second to talk about Atlanta's approach to this game?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to go for. Doyle just started trolling.
Sorry.
He just started
You talked about the upcoming
I appreciate
schedule.
No, I'm there.
Doyle
I'm there
forgot
for
he wasn't on his weekly NFL podcast, and he thought that's what he was doing.
I enjoyed the joke, though.
If we were any other country in the world, most newspaper headlines across the newspaper where it's have the line, Tata got it wrong. He came out in a 3-4-1-2 is probably the best way to describe it, with Almirón under the two strikers, Jeff Lanerowitz at center back, and it just didn't work out, right? Eric Rometty and Darlington Nagbe couldn't find the ball. Miguel Almirón was too high up to relieve pressure. They had two strikers that made it. We talked about how great Tim Parker and Aaron Long are. They're incredibly athletic. What's the one weakness of their game? It's probably the decision making, right? If you have to make them make hard decisions on when to step, when to stay, who to pick up, that's when they suffer a little bit. But all of a sudden, you give them a 1v1 matchup, and my God, those got to be the two best players in the league at that. And Atlanta played right into their hands. I mean, Tata Martino has gotten almost every single thing right in his time in Major League Soccer, and he got it wrong on Sunday, and it played right into what the Red Bulls want to do.
I would argue not from, like, an emotional point of view, but from an actual, like, matchup point of view. The two biggest games he's coached, though, were last year in the playoffs and this one against the Red Bulls, and he got both of those wrong. And so you look at this team, and you just ask yourself, if you can't get in a game where Almirón can get out into a track meet and start running, what is this team? What is Atlanta United?
Because they don't press as well as they did last year.
And Red Bulls wouldn't even have the ball in the back if anyone was close to them. You know Columbus went last year, which is the team that wants the ball more than anyone else in the Eastern Conference
right
now.
How much of that was about Zach Steffen having a day?
Okay, fair. But the point is, if Greg Berhalter is willing to give up possession and sit behind and beat Atlanta United, that means that every other coach in the Eastern Conference who's less dogmatic than him is willing to do it as well. So you have the question marks that you have around Atlanta United. One of the things that was frustrating for me with them was there's a few times in the first half where they broke the initial press to Nagbe, and instead of hitting a quick ball to get out 1v1, Nagbe wants to connect with Rometty next to him or connect with Gressel coming up in a quick 1-2 and then take a couple of dribbles up the field, and then Red Bulls have recovered defensively. And so there's a question in midfield where, like, who fits? And then late in the game, he pulls Jeff Lanerowitz up, and Jeff Lanerowitz doesn't belong in midfield anymore in Major League Soccer.
Oh,
like,
I disagree.
He can't cover enough. He can't cover enough space.
He's a much better midfielder now than he is a defender.
He can't cover enough space. Yeah, Red Bulls were walking around him. There were gigantic gaps. This game should have
Red
been 4-5-0.
Red Bulls were walking around everybody in the midfield at that point. But, like, I'm not tossing out Jeff Lorenowitz's usefulness because, you know, they got played off the field in this one particular game. I think if you're Tata, you have to look at Rometty specifically in terms of can he do the job defensively, because so far I'm kind of lukewarm on that. And Nagbe is just... He's a guy who can shuttle the ball if the game's comfortable. If the game's not comfortable, I'm not sure I expect him to show up.
What happened with the handshake? Because it became the meme, and everybody's Red Bulls fans are doing their thing with it, which God bless them.
So I was right behind.
I love Red Bulls Twitter. I think they hate me.
Yeah,
I'm cool with
that.
You do know that Red Bulls Twitter is just all of Doyle's burner accounts, right?
And they all make 96 references, Doyle.
That
just
explains
had a whole
it.
List
yeah, there's like 50, 28, 3 references, and you're like, oh, none of these have avatars. Yeah, what happened here? They all came at the same time. That's very strange.
So Chris Armas was pumping up the crowd as the game started to close. Kaku was doing it earlier. Brian White started doing it.
Yo, Brian White got
Brian,
it on
yeah,
it?
Brian,
let's go.
Brian White looked over, saw Armas do it, and Armas do it, and started doing it, and I was like, that a way to
and
just jump right in behind your coach.
Looked up to the suite, and BWP was like, yes, do it, my son, do it.
So they were pumping up the crowd, and Robles is going to take like a goal kick super slowly to waste out the clock. That's to Tata's left, and Tata is staring at Armas on his right the entire time, just drumming his hands on his arm, just boring a hole in Chris Armas as Armas like looks around at the crowd and gets everyone up. I mean, this is the biggest win is hit in his coaching career.
For sure.
A very short one. Enjoy it. And when it ended, I was locked in, and Tata made a pretty quick move at the Red Bull bench. But as he was heading over there, and I don't know what was going to happen, Almirón comes by, and then Tata makes a quick move back towards Almirón and holds him back. So Almirón said something to Chris Armas. Tata quickly pushes him out into the tunnel, and then all of the assistant coaches come in. I'll tell you, both assistant coaches were barking at each other from the two benches earlier in the game. Obviously, everyone was barking at the fourth official because there was penalty kicks called and then waved off and not called and then called and all that stuff. So it was a pretty interactive game overall.
Tune in to Instant Replay.
Boom.
Wow. That's
he
a good
beat
promo.
Me to it.
So there was something going on for a while. I think Tata was just upset that he felt like Chris Armas was showing them up.
Yeah, Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution said Martino told reporters that Almiron and Armas were starting to argue after the game. He moved to pull Almiron away, which matches what you were saying. He didn't know what they were arguing about, but, quote, "I like coaches with a low profile," Martino said.
Yeah, the moment Armas started pumping up the crowd, he looked over, and he was not happy with that at all. All I can tell you is it's delicious.
Who's going to win the Shield? I gave you the kind of rundown on the schedules. Red Bulls are better than Atlanta at home. Atlanta are better than the Red Bulls on the road per their current records. Atlanta have two at home. Red Bulls have two on the road. Kind of flipping the strengths. Who wins this thing? It's a one-point difference.
I think it goes to the final weekend.
I think it's Atlanta.
I pray it goes to the final weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope we get that on decision day. Actually, now that I'm looking at it, Philadelphia is usually really good against the Red Bulls, and the Red Bulls have to go down to Philly, and Philly's going to need that game because they want home field in the playoffs as well. I still think it's advantage Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That's where the smart money is, but things can happen.
You'd be surprised if Atlanta dropped points to New England or Chicago.
Very.
So it's on that last game, and if they're in a situation where they can tie – to win it, if Red Bulls drops points going into that, then I think it's pretty much over.
So I wrote a column, and
congratulations.
I'm sticking behind it, baby. DC United. We said this was the biggest game of the season for them and for the Montreal Impact, and then I'm at this wedding, and Ben Bear pulls out his phone, and he says, it's 5-0 DC. And I danced even worse than I had danced the rest of the night, and it wasn't just slight intoxication. It was joy. It was joy at DC United and Lucharoux doing their thing. And I'm also told that the local broadcast said that Lucharoux was an emerging nickname that many people were using. And so I cackle in delight at that as well. What happened to Montreal?
An influencer.
How did this happen? You're right, I am.
Montreal bunkers, and Bobby's going to try to pretend like they don't. Montreal bunkers. It's all they can do. And if you could work usually a number 10, but a good quality, skillful player into those tight spots in between the bunker and have legitimate ball security and legitimate ability to string passes together, the bunker, it
that's
gets
not
destroyed.
The story of this game. That,
that
is
absolutely
so far from
that's
the
literally,
story of
that's
this game.
Literally how, that's literally how they scored the first goal. That's literally how they scored
the
first
goal.
The
first goal was
Acosta getting between the lines, those tight little lines of that bunker, and creating something out of nothing. Okay, and once they did that, the bunker got destroyed, and Montreal had to come out and play.
The bunker didn't get destroyed,
which they cannot do, and DC just high pressed them to death, and that was that. Go ahead, Bobby.
The first goal came from Lucho getting a good spot, and at some point you have to win individual battles, and Lucho beat tight air on an individual battle. And all of a sudden, he beats tight air. He's 1v1 with a center back. They play a 1-2, and he's in. But the next two goals came off pressing and counter-pressing, right? That
right,
was not about
– because they were out of the bunker at that point because of the game state. Montreal had to come out and had to try to play.
No, they weren't out at that point. That was about them just playing their normal game, and DC did something great. DC did something very well. This game, you said it correctly in the late night show, this is about DC pressing Montreal well and doing what you've been saying DC should do all year, which is use the energy and the athleticism of their front four, really. I mean, not really Rooney, but Assad and Canales and Areola and press teams. That was what this team was about.
That's what
game.
The second half was. But the game was decided on that first goal when they broke down the bunker.
Montreal are still in sixth place. They're still in the playoff field, 40 points. Union are 7 ahead of them, 31-31-31 between them, Columbus Crew SC, and Impact in games played. DC United, 29 games played, 38 points. They control their destiny. They win this weekend, they jump it. They win again, they're pushing on. There's no guarantees here. It could fall out from underneath them, but this feels like a pretty good indication that Ben Olsen and his boys are going to the playoffs, and I personally welcome that from an entertainment perspective. I need more Lucharoux. I need more of this building partnership that I think is up there with among the best in MLS history, just because it hasn't had longevity, just because it hasn't won anything. Those are the next steps, but I'm excited for the next couple of years, and you have not always been able to say that about DC United. There were a lot of years when we just looked at Luciano Acosta, and we were just disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, damn, there's more to you, man. Where is it? Why isn't it showing? And now, finally, it's all showing. I look around NYCFC, not much showing there. Minnesota, 2-1 winners. Houston beats San Jose.
One point that's worth making about DC United. Sorry to like bring it back to this, but you know,
no, that's your bingo square marked off. Yeah.
Just think about this with DC United. We talk about how flying they are and how bad Orlando's been. DC United was a Will Johnson open goal and goal play of a lifetime from Rooney and Acosta from having lost at home to an Orlando team that has taken 5 points in like 17 months, right? Like, just think about how fast things change. But DC had lost that game to Orlando, or from like that moment,
right,
with the open goal.
It didn't have that jumping off point.
Yeah, to where they are now. Like, talk about the history.
Didn't they also score in like the 88th minute against Minnesota at home?
Yeah.
Which would have been more points they dropped, which would have taken they wouldn't be in control of their own destiny at this point.
Not quite the juncture of the other one, but.
I'm sorry. Yours was better.
Yeah, it was. But anyway, I just think about that, like how close this team was losing at home to Orlando. Now all of a sudden we're saying like they're a real challenger in the East.
Does it say anything about the league that a team's capable of basically like not existing for 3-4 months and then making the playoffs?
Says a lot about the East this year. It absolutely says. I mean,
it happened in the West. Seattle.
Seattle, yeah, first half of the season. And, like, yeah, New England have won one game in the last 4 months, and they're still they still have a shot at making the playoffs. Like, it's, yeah, it's gotten, like, top-heavy.
LA Galaxy are right there in the West. They beat Vancouver, and they're 2 points back of Real Salt Lake. And I love Real Salt Lake about 55% of the time. The other 45% of the time, I basically assume that the LA Galaxy are going to pass them here. Brendan Hannon, the PR director for the LA Galaxy, threw out the tweet the other day, which is his job. Applause to him. He did win Austin Barry, Defender of the Year, Rookie of the Year Award.
I don't think Brendan treats it like a job. I think it's his passion.
It's a passion, slinging soccer. He says Zlatan should be the MVP.
He's wrong.
He did score two goals.
He's wrong.
He's pulling him back into contention. He's got 20.
Who is the MVP right now? Is it still Joseph?
It's still Joseph, for sure.
If Red Bulls win.
If Red Bulls win, you may be thinking
Aaron
about
Long?
BWP.
Not Kaku.
Not Tim Parker.
I mean, I think Kamar Lawrence is probably the defender of the year. He's not going to win it because fullbacks don't ever get the respect they deserve. But
I was trying to give you a point there, David.
Yeah, now we're
going to
see if Doyle's an influencer. Yeah. He's out here stumping the Kamar Lawrence, just trying to drum it up to see what happens.
Zlatan is in the mix if they make the playoffs. Acosta's in the mix if DC United make the playoffs. BWP's in the mix. Almiron is technically in the mix.
This
I guess,
such a bizarre list. It's like sixth place teams and first place teams.
Right?
No one in between.
There's nobody from Philly. There's nobody from
LA.
Here's a question from the bottom of my heart. The Galaxy, even if you didn't think they were going to make the playoffs, right? Even if you guys didn't have them in the top six, and I actually want to go back and check if you did. Do you guys remember? I had them in the playoffs in the preseason.
I'm sure that I had them in the playoffs.
Then how on earth can they sign a player and they all of a sudden underachieve where we originally had them in preseason, and you're going to try and tell me that that player deserves being in the MVP race?
Maybe because we're all idiots? I don't know.
I mean, that's a fair semantic argument, right? It's a good rhetorical argument. But, like, Zlatan has not been the problem at all for LA this year. It comes down to their defense. And the defense has been good. You know, the last two games, they've posted shutouts, but they've scored 60 goals this season, man. They're going to be one of the 20 highest scoring teams in MLS history. I think, looking at it, I think only Atlanta has scored more goals. Zlatan hasn't been the problem. But, like, rhetorically, I understand what you're saying, and that might actually disqualify him from...
Yeah, but it won't. This is MVP voting. This is a popularity contest. It always is.
You think MLS might work Zlatan into the top?
I don't know. They might. They're definitely going to try. I think he, for sure, right now, for me, is a top three. But that's only if they make the playoffs.
BWP is a clear number two.
Yeah, that's only if they make the playoffs to me. Seattle 4, Colorado 0. Bobby wanted to bring it back, and I'm not letting him. Chris C, 0. Philly, 0. Corey Burke had an own goal created that got called back in this one. But I think overall a good result for the Union coming off that Open Cup loss to go on the road.
Oh, great result.
And
get
a point. That's huge. New England, they got smoked off the field 4-1. But there were some controversial calls in that way, which is why you should watch Instant Replay. Thank you for the inspiration, Bobby. Is NYCFC just dead and done? Like, I don't need a long diatribe on this, but I just...
I don't want to say dead and done, but...
Like, from a their actual goals standpoint, like, making the playoffs was the bare minimum?
Well, they're not going to get they're going to have to play a knockout round. It's probably going to be at home because they've had such a good record the first half of the season. But they're 2-5-4 in their last 11 games. That's a third of the season. Like, this is not just a blip.
A throwaway.
This is, like, this is the team who they are now. Dome keeps tinkering. He played a 4-3-3 this week. Alex Ring, who was one of the league's best defensive midfielders for a year and a half, played it as attacking midfielder, the most advanced of the central midfield trio in that one. Like, this team's in trouble.
Well, I'll give a positive note on NYCFC. I'm with you that they've been struggling. It hasn't been pretty. But we all know how talented and important Yanhel Herrera is to that team, supposed to be back sometime before the end of the regular season. Jesus Medina has been out. NYCFC are 10-4-4 when Medina has started. They are 3-6-4 without him. If you look at this 9-game skid, he has not been available for any of it. So presumably by the end of October, they could have Herrera and Medina back on their team, which could be a huge lift.
Grasping for straws, RSL went to Kansas City, got a 1-1 draw, but they had some drama. Albert Ruznak was not on the flight. He was not in the starting lineup. Sam Stachel has the lowdown for us. Sam, what's up, man?
Not too much, guys. How's it going today?
Good. You're speaking extra fast, which means you have extra information. I've been following you on this story all weekend long. What happened, and what does it mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, pretty much what happened was outlined there last night by Stuart Holden. But basically, you know, Ruznak has been wanting a new contract for pretty much this entire season. They haven't been able to get it done. So from what I understand and what Holden reported last night, they got this thing across the line on Saturday. But at that point, Ruznak had already missed the flight that RSL was taking to Kansas City. He then missed training that they had in Kansas City because he wasn't on the flight. He got in late on Saturday. So he started on the bench on Sunday, obviously came in. But this is a pretty significant deal here. He's signed through 2021 guaranteed with a club option through 2022, from what I've been told. And the average pay is going to be about $2 million per year for him, which will put him right in the neighborhood of Jerome Mupsisian in terms of the biggest contract in RSL history. So, you know, pretty big investment for RSL, but should be more than enough to keep Ruznak happy, which is obviously important for them. And I think some potentially interesting knock-on effects here, too. Because of the way that this came about, sort of, right? So Ruznak goes in and he kind of threatens, hey, I'm not going to play unless you give me this new deal at a very, very important time in the season. So kind of my question is, okay, RSL gave him this new deal, but what's to prevent anybody else on the team from going and doing that here over the last couple of weeks of the year, right? So could potentially put them in a tricky situation. If I'm João Plata or Jefferson Savarino and my agent hasn't already made a call about my pay, I'm wondering what's going on. So, you know, that's an interesting aspect to this, too.
Before we get to anything else here, and I know you're bird-dogging about everything around MLS. I know, Dave. You have to eye-roll me every time with that. Craig Weibel, correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is the last year of his deal. Where do things stand with Craig and Real Salt Lake right now?
Yeah, this is the last year of his contract, and as far as I know, there's not, like, a ton of movement there. So this could potentially be his last few months in Salt Lake. We'll see. I mean, from my perspective, he's obviously had a few really big hits with Ruznak and Savarino in particular. I think Demir Krylak has done a nice job, but you know, there's been a couple expensive misses in there too with Jurev Mavsisian and Alfredo Ortuño at the striker position. So we'll see what they do out in Salt Lake. But yeah, he is coming down to the end here in terms of what his contract is.
The other big conversation we're talking about, Sam, is tied record amount of coaching changes so far already this season. What have you talked about with people around MLS of what they think about what's going on?
I mean, I think it's just kind of an indication that, you know, there's a little bit more accountability in the league these days than there has been, not necessarily from last year or the year before or anything like that, because last year there were a good amount of changes as well, particularly in the season, but from years past, you know, the ownership's having a little bit less patience with coaches. So that if they feel like they need to make a move, they're not afraid to do one. And I don't anticipate that the coaching carousel is done for this season. Maybe I shouldn't say for this season. I don't think we're going to see any more during the season, but I'm sure there will be a couple more changes probably after the year wraps up. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how these jobs are filled. What kind of structures put in place in some of these teams? Because, you know, I look at LA, I look at Vancouver, and I'm like, okay, are they going to go out and build out their front office a little bit more? Or are they just going to hire a coach and keep going like that? So I think that's really interesting, and I think that's kind of a big discussion here going forward.
What do you make of the openings we know about so far? San Jose, there's been some rumors of who's interviewing there. Now Vancouver has an opening.
Yeah, so I think it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I mean, obviously there's the reports about Mark Dos Santos in Vancouver with him being the front runner. From what I understand, that's the case as well. I believe San Jose are interested in him too. San Jose's been linked to a few different names. I'm kind of curious to see what happens with San Jose, because I believe Jesse Fiorinelli, from what I've been told, he only has a year left on his deal, their general manager. So for any guy that he's making a pitch to, that candidate kind of needs to evaluate not just the roster and where San Jose are headed in terms of their on-field stuff, but he has to evaluate, is Jesse Fiorinelli, this man that's hiring me, going to be around in a year? Or am I going to have a new boss that might want to bring in his own guy? So I think that's part of the calculus here too. But in terms of kind of the hierarchy, you know, obviously it's pretty, I think, straightforward. I think the Galaxy is considered the most attractive job. That won't really surprise anybody. Vancouver would probably come next, and then San Jose after that at this point in time.
About a month left till the decision day, and then it's the MLS Cup playoffs. Sam, what are you following? What are you thinking about? What sticks out to you right now?
Yeah, so a lot of coaching stuff, honestly. Obviously, those three teams that I just mentioned. But in addition to that, you know, looking at Chicago, Veljko Panovic out of contract. Looking at Philadelphia, Jim Curtin going to be out of contract and has a new GM there in Ernst Tanner. Looking at the New York Red Bulls, what's Chris Armas' situation look like? Is he going to be signed to a new deal? Is his deal up? What's going on there? So those are three potential ones. Colorado as well. We all know that they've had some serious issues here this season. So is Anthony Hudson, is his job in jeopardy? So definitely looking at that right now. And then just kind of coming down to the end here with the playoff chases. You know, the Galaxy are playing well right now. Does Dom Kinnear have any chance at that job? From what I understand, what I would guess, probably not. But he has them in a pretty good spot at the moment too. So we'll see. That's what I have my eye on right now. Mainly is the coaching search and potential carousel. But definitely a lot of intriguing factors here.
At Sam Stachel on Twitter, you can follow him at MLSsoccer.com as well. All his work goes there. Sam, thanks for joining us, man. Get back to it.
Sure. Oh, and one other thing. I can't believe I forgot to mention Tata Martino in that coaching carousel, but obviously we'll see what happens with him in Atlanta. And if he does go, what do Atlanta look like in the future? Because he's been so huge for their recruitment. I think they could replace him in terms of his tactics and his on-field stuff, but would they be able to go out and get those big signings out of South America without a Tata type? I guess maybe we'll find out, maybe not, but wanted to mention that before I go.
The final word. Thank you, Sam. We appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Big thanks to Sam. All right, U.S. national team time. 24-man roster coming out for Dave Sarakin. I mean, it's a lot of the names you would figure here, names that we have seen for a while now, the two big ones that are back. Brad Guzan, Michael Bradley, Jonathan Moen gets his first camp here. So does Ben Sweat, which was a puzzler. Should we start with Bradley? He's back for the first time in a year. Same thing with Guzan. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Or is it an indifferent thing?
I'm kind of indifferent about it for the most part, because this is most likely going to be Dave Sarakin's final camp in charge of the U.S. national team. Paul Tenorio in The Athletic today had an article saying that they're going to try to name the head coach by November 1st. So I'm a little bit indifferent, just in the way that I'm indifferent to these games. Overall, though, like, Michael Bradley hasn't even been a top five American defensive midfielder in MLS this year. And, like, he might not even be top 10. He has struggled. As soon as the final whistle blew on that Chivas series, he has struggled for this Toronto team. So on merit, I would rather have seen, you know, Russell Knaus get a look here, or like go with one of the super young guys, you know, from NYCFC, James Sands or Chris Durkin. That said, I think actually DC have a game, so that's probably why Knaus wasn't called. But hopefully it won't matter that much. You know, hopefully the youth movement continues.
Dave Sarakin says it's about experience, about kind of melding these two groups together. We have a very young group, which we've seen in the last couple of camps, Bobby, and that average age has been hovering right between 22 and 24. I think it's still there, though, despite the addition of these two guys. Does this bridge? What is the message this sends to the young guys? What can Michael Bradley provide right now to this team?
I agree with everything Matt said. I want to add two things to that. One is that the main purpose of what the national team is trying to accomplish right now before our head coach is re-inspiring the fan base. And does Michael Bradley do that, or does he detract from it? And this doesn't speak to whether Michael Bradley deserves to be there, whether he would help the team, or whether he would, you know, is one of our best 11 players. But just with the way the fan base is at, I'm not sure this is the right decision to re-inspire them. If he wants to be brought in, that needs to be a decision made by a long-term head coach who's willing to make a brave move and set his stamp on a team. So for that reason, I don't love what's happening.
Yeah, I agree with the way Bobby says it, which is a player of that player of his magnitude for this program.
Because he does have that magnitude.
Yes.
That is
and
one
at the
thing
timing in his career where he's not 24, he's not guaranteed to be a part of the next whatever X years, was a decision that should be made by whoever's carrying this program forward. And that coach now still will have to make that decision, but I find it a bit interesting that you'd pull Michael Bradley in before you're going to make that hire.
And the second point I was going to make, which I forgot, which is why I liked the awkward ending before, was that, Andrew, you nailed it with the transition to the new group. And what do you want this team to be? Is this now Tyler Adams, Weston McKinney, Matt Miazga's team, or do you want the older players? And that's a big stinking decision that someone needs to make, and it probably wasn't Dave Sarakin's to make.
Sarakin did say that Jozy Altidore would have been part of this camp as well if he hadn't come off injured in each of his last two games. And the other real veteran here is Brad Guzan. I don't have any problem with Guzan. I think if you look at MLS, the Guzan, Melia, Stefan Fry, Zach Steffen, who to me is the number one.
Then why isn't Melia in here?
I mean, it's a question of having that international experience. But
for two friendlies?
I'm with you. I also think if Melia was, 28 instead of 31, he would be.
But we did this with Romando. Romando got called in late in his career when he wasn't getting called in for a while.
How'd we do in that qualifying cycle?
He went to the World Cup. He went to the 2014 World Cup. We did fantastic in that one, Mr. Matt Doyle.
Yeah, no, I agree. And maybe there's a role play to be had there where Melia comes in and he's like, yeah, you know what? I don't expect to be the starter. Whereas Brad Guzan may come into the situation and rightfully so, and from his point of view, and say, I should be starting. I'm going to go win this job. This is my job to have. This will be my World Cup to have coming up, obviously, should we qualify, which is the point U.S. Soccer's at this point. Ben Sweat, left back, is a position of need. So
it
that's
is.
Where you're at.
Look, Ben Sweat was really good when he was playing for Patrick Vieira.
Agreed.
And he has been less good under Domé Touré.
As everyone has.
There you go. So I have no problem with Ben Sweat being here. It's not like we're stacked with left backs. If Danny Acosta had been able to hold down a job with RSL, maybe it would have been him. They're struggling to even think of another left back American left back who's impressed in the league. So,
which I think is one of the things is we get stuck in this space where everyone has to be a superstar and all this stuff. And it's we have a league right now where you have a ton of players in your pool playing. You don't always have to jam someone else into the wrong spot. It's okay to go call up Brad Evans for a World Cup qualifier when you need to fill that spot. It's okay to call up Alan Gordon for a World Cup qualifier when you need to fill a spot. And that, we're not in that place right now.
Right.
So that's why I think people will think it's a
bit
odd.
It's with Ben Sweat, we're just looking for a backup left back who we could put out there against Panama and don't lose us the game.
Right.
We're not asking you to win us the game. Don't lose us the game. I'm fine with that. I hope he actually wins that role because he actually can cross the ball and he is actually really useful on set pieces. Oh, God, it's been a long day.
It has been. Too much content. Anything to add? Jonathan Moen, he's in here. That's a nice little winger for us to take a look at.
Winger who plays in Denmark. He's a right-footed kid, plays inverted. Very good 1v1 player, but also has a very good passing eye as well, especially in transition. Kenny Saif is back after missing most of the last year due to injury since filing his one-time switch. I'm excited to see him. Josh Sargent is back, even though he hasn't played with Werder Bremen yet. Aaron Long gets the call in again. Reggie Cannon. And another young player who's really earned it. I don't think he's going to overtake DeAndre Yedlin, but he's a really good, well-rounded 20-year-old right back.
All of a sudden,
nice
we got
to
a ton of really good right backs.
Yeah.
We're still missing on the left back side. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS. We're going to break. On the other side, Ben Bear and 22 under 22.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
We are-
Radio, driven by Continental. Another week, another Extra Time live, also conveniently driven by Continental. That's because 22 under 22 is on. We're doing it this week. We changed the age limits. It's now down to 22. 22 through 11 will be revealed on Wednesday on MLSsoccer.com, at MLS, all those channels you probably already follow. And then Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, will reveal the top 10 on Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern. We'll stream that live on MLS channels. We'll have interviews with a bunch of the names on this list, which we cannot reveal because, you know, that'd be kind of defeating the whole point.
No spoilers.
We know basic. I think Alfonso Davies is going to make the list.
Yeah, it's a pretty good bet. I'm trying to preserve the integrity of your list, Ben.
I don't know anything.
This has been Bear's list, and this has been Bear. You're surprised because normally you would wait till the mailbag to get your Ben Bear dosage on a Monday.
I've only been quarantined off into a specific part of the podcast.
No, I just said normally.
Okay, it's fun to make. I mean,
but whatever assumption you want to make may or may not be correct. So tell us about 2222, Ben. You can rank your own list, by the way, at MLSsoccer.com, so don't come in our mentions with that BS unless you have a list, because I feel like that's...
That's the most fun I get, you know, every year whenever fans...
To complain.
Fans complain about the list that MLS puts out, even though it's not MLS. Many people voted, including this year, four anonymous technical staffers from teams across the league.
Who were they?
Yeah. I don't know. They're anonymous.
Yeah, what were their names?
They're anonymous.
From what club?
What do they do?
What's their position?
I don't know.
What context clues can you give us?
I don't know.
Who else voted? Of course, we voted.
So
I voted.
All of us in this room except for Goss voted.
I voted. I just voted in the public opinion.
Yeah.
I'm a normal fan, unlike you.
He had a little bit of a hanging Chad issue with his ballot.
That's a deep cut there, Wavy. I like that. You like
forgot number 18 there. We had Alexi Lalas, Paul Tenorio, Doug McIntyre. Yeah, the four anonymous technical staffers, bunch of MLS soccer people, the usual, basically.
So here's how you had to be eligible, in case you were a person who needs details here. 22 under 22, you can understand under 22. So you had to be 21 or younger before.
There are certain people who cannot understand that.
No, the Alex Moyle stands do
well, there's
not
that,
understand.
But there's also actually a bunch of our PAs. I was just talking to a bunch of our PAs, and they didn't understand the concept of under 22. I was like, wait, but they were like, but 22-year-olds are still eligible. I was like, under 22.
Under 22.
They need to be 21 it's in the name. Or younger.
Right. So just so everybody out there, because we may need to do that. We'll speak slowly. We will enunciate. 22 under 22. So you have to be 21 or younger before October 28th, 2018. So those folks were eligible. There were 99 eligible players. Talk us through the reasoning to make the switch, because it's been 24 under 24 for years. It's practically a tradition now that we put this list out and everybody rips it.
Yeah, I think we've heard the complaints from inside, from outside the MLSsoccer.com organization,
like
as
people.
Well as inside the MLSsoccer.com organization.
Your people.
This is sometimes that we've been this is something that we've been discussing for a long time. You know, the need to get younger. Last year, with a guy and Miguel Amarone finished number one. Obviously, Miguel Amarone's pretty much he was almost a finished product already when he was named number one. And we wanted to get a little more potential with our picks going forward, and with all the young DPs being signed, guys like Diego Rossi, Medina, Bobby's favorite player, Ezequiel Barco, all those players, they're all 20, 21 or younger. So it's weird to have guys come to the league for that amount of outlay that teams are putting into it and then raise the and have the age limits so high. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we also have all these homegrowns coming in, guys like Alfonso Davies, who signed by signed when he was 15 years old, making impact, becoming one of the best players in the league by 17. Bunch of other guys like that. So Reggie Cannon just got caught up to the national
team.
You
did. So we just we voted on the following criteria: technical ability, tactical IQ, physical attributes, and future potential. Unlike in years past where it was a very weighted ballot, like you would put in numbers for each guy and it would spit out its final score, which, full disclosure, I always gamed because if like, it spit out scores that I didn't think matched up with my list, I would just – I'd fudge it and I'd move my guys where I wanted to anyway. So thank you, Ben, for making it more reflective of the way that I vote.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys –
It was all for you.
How did you guys all vote? How did you balance those four buckets? Because I kind of did, but in the end, I just kind of went with my gut. And I was like, these are the guys I think are the best. You know, potential measures in, but it's not everything. I was more on the, have you played first-team soccer? Have you succeeded? That matters a lot to me.
I weighed future success pretty highly. Like, it's hard to tell who's better between Diego Rossi and Severino and Medina and Latif Blessing and these guys. So in the tiebreaker on that, I said, who do I think is going to be the better player in 5 years? Who's going to be at the bigger club having more success with their national team and those other aspects?
That's pretty good. Mine is more of a, I would call it like a freeform jazz exploration. Like you just sort of like look at it all at once and like this note goes here and then this note goes there. And then you know, you bring the bass line in and all that.
Meanwhile,
just
you're
so
probably,
you know, Joel, none of these players know what jazz is.
Yeah.
Not a single player on this list.
Are you
ever
saying
heard
they're uncultured? Come on now.
No, I'm saying they're children. And Doyle is not.
Wow. How did you vote, Ben, since you're the mastermind here?
I probably didn't do enough on potential than I have. Most of my guys
don't let Bobby
played,
swear you.
Most of my guys are pretty much regulars. There's a guy I'm at the end of my list. I'm looking at it right now of Jalen Lindsey and James Sands. James Sands, shout out because I've seen him so much as a youth player, and I think he has a lot of potential to be either. Dome said that he's the number six of the future for NYC, but I do like I don't know
if that's a compliment. If Dome,
yeah, I was gonna say that, but then I feel like not gonna say that. But I think I leaned a little bit more towards production.
Who's your top five here? Give us your top five.
I have Davies, Adams, Diego Rossi of LAFC. And then Medina, and then Reggie Cannon.
Okay.
So let me ask you this. If Yanhel Herrera had been healthy this whole year, would he be in your top five?
He's playing at the level he played last year.
Yeah.
Then yes.
Yeah. He's my number three.
It was tough. I mean, it was kind of I did mine decently quickly because we were checking stuff, troubleshooting some stuff. But I think – it's kind of out of sight, out of mind a little bit. But I did have him at number eight on my list.
But that's also tough because you're talking about, for a player that age, you literally have no sample size. So now you take away 7 months from a guy like Yanhel Herrera, and it's like, what are you relying on? Because we've talked about, like, everyone we've mentioned 6 weeks ago, we felt differently than we did now because there's so little stuff about these guys out there. We've seen so little of them. Yanhel Herrera now, you're talking about, like, 1 year ever. And I agree that the U-20 World Cup stuff pushes him past some other guys and shows you that he can do it on different levels and he can have different responsibilities on different teams and whatnot. But still, 7 months for a guy who's only played 2 years of professional soccer is a lot.
Yeah, it's significant.
And,
no doubt about
and
it.
He wasn't, I will say, at the beginning of this year, even though their NYC's record was pretty good when he was playing, I don't think he was as good this year as he was last year.
I agree with that.
So that swayed me a little bit in that category.
Can I just throw out the one name here? And, of course, again, Wednesday, you can get 22 through 11, the official list, and then the top 10 live on MLS channels via Extra Time Live, driven by Continental at 2 p.m. on Thursday. Where did everybody have Ezequiel Barco? Because this is the name that I think there's always kind of the – there's the flash points. And, you know, I'm a narrative guy, so I pick up on those pretty quickly. Wink, wink, Bobby Warshaw, boom, boom. But I had him at 11 – and I struggled with that, his positioning throughout this.
He struggles with positioning too.
Mm. No, I'm totally with you. And I'll put Andre Horta into this group as well. These guys who were extremely successful where they were before, had big price tags because people thought that they could launch off to the biggest clubs in the world, but haven't been particularly good in Major League Soccer. And how do you weigh those two things? And Andrew, I'm with you. That was my toughest decision.
You could throw in Josue Coleman as well. The only difference
is not the same category as those two.
I mean, they spent a lot of money on Coleman.
Yeah, but not.
And he's a star of that U-20 national team down there.
He wasn't regarded as highly with as much potential as Horta or Barco.
Give me the number.
He was more in the Rossi Medina category.
He was.
Right.
Coleman, those three, I'd say, were those three coming into the year.
So for me with Barco, I agree with the MLS stuff, but, like, I've seen him do things in, like, a Copa Sudamerica that I've not seen anyone else on this list do. And that's, like, a professional level that we're talking about, like an impressive level.
He was good, against Flamengo.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. And they had him taking set pieces and penalties as their most important player. So, like, he has done things professionally. It's not in MLS. You talk about the price tag and – clearly hasn't fit in the way you'd want. I couldn't get him out of my top 10 because it's just like you can't. I had him at like 8 or something
like
that.
Which is totally fair way to look at it.
What about you, Bobby? Where was he?
Not in the top 10. I'll leave it there.
It's a public ballot.
You already put it out on Twitter.
Oh, I did already put it out on Twitter. I had him 16 or 18.
Yeah. So I think you had him at 16.
I had him at 18.
I have him at 7. Bobby, yeah. So we've talked about this a lot over the course of this process and, you know, discussing the final list and everything. In this one case, I would say I did weigh potential a little more than what I've seen with my own eyes.
I'm not sure that Barco has that potential though. He's really secure on the, like, he might just be Nagby. He might just be Nagby, and that's a really good player. But he doesn't
Nagby who
came in number one on this list.
Yeah,
then.
5 years ago, yeah. You know, when it was. Anyway, we were kind of wrong about Darlington Nagbe. He did not become a generational player. He's just a solid MLS starter, and that might be what Barco is. He has good ball security. He is not able to complete dangerous passes. His ability to take guys on is only to create room, not to really create danger. And look, he's lost his starting job twice already when it was given to him on a silver platter. That has to count against him.
I actually want to match right in most of what he said there, but I also just want to add that bad situations hurt careers, right? It doesn't mean that Barco isn't generationally talented or he's not good enough to one day play for Manchester United, but it just means that Atlanta United might be a bad situation. And if you have a bad 2 or 3 years, that can bring down your ceiling a lot because then you have to go to another club. It takes away a step out of your career, your ability to grow for those couple years. So that's what has me worried.
But also, as we said, though, October 1st is coming gone here. We have no Tata news. So that could be a part of his career arc as well. Yeah.
But also what we're talking about, sometimes feels outrageous because you're saying, is Barco going to get to Manchester United? If Barco plays for Shakhtar Donetsk, he would be one of the best MLS exports ever. Like, the levels...
It's a terrible take.
But is it?
It's a terrible take.
Champions League starters that come out of MLS?
That's neither here nor there. What I'm saying is that Atlanta United would drill Shakhtar Donetsk if they played right now. Would absolutely drill Shakhtar
Donetsk. There are full Brazil internationals that start for that team.
There are full Paraguayan internationals that start at Atlanta United.
I think Paraguay and Brazil are different levels.
Yeah, that's riled. That's riled.
That was a
again, Bobby's not expressing himself fully, vocally.
I think he is expressing himself right
now. I love how Doyle also said that after just like... complaining about the way Atlanta United played yesterday against the New York
Red
Bulls.
They got beat by a better team. Obviously, the Red Bulls would destroy Shakhtar Donetsk.
So, speaking of stretches here, what's the biggest stretch on everybody's list? Because I threw Brian Reynolds in at 19. I feel
that was not the smartest thing I've ever seen.
Like, that's once again. I think I just watched a bunch of highlight reels from like Bayern's U20 team probably, and I'd seen him score a couple goals, and I was like. I had the Bundesliga mist over me, and I got a little.
I'm not so sure about Brian Reynolds.
Get a little over enthusiastic on that one. Anybody else want to share their biggest?
The voting wrapped up like 3 weeks ago, and I have Danny Acosta at number 15.
Yeah,
he had lost his starting job a bit, but it had only been 2 or 3 weeks since he had lost his starting job.
He was
job.
Like neck and neck with Plata, so no longer is.
I had Durkin in number 9, I believe, on my list.
Durkin is one I think is going to be overrepresented on this list because of where he was the earliest season, because of the hype he had. And then Ruskinos got back, and it's like, okay, Durkin's just hanging out on the bench again.
At the time, I thought he had all these intangible things that I love. His awareness, his understanding of lanes, his comfort on the ball, his ability to pass. And I thought, if those continue to grow at the same trajectory, all of a sudden he's a national team level player on the ball. But since, I've had a little bit of this realization about defensive midfielders around the world where you just need a certain body type, that there aren't many number sixes who have that, and James Sands and Liam Fraser have it too, like 6 feet, broad shoulders, kind of like a big trunk, and they just don't move their feet that well. They don't glide around the field. And I'm worried that if you just don't have that body in 2018 as a midfielder, that you might actually just have a limited ceiling.
I'm here for him becoming the Hubie Brown of like MLS commentators. He's like so much upside with this kid. His, you know, he's got great feet. His trunk is really good. His length, incredible.
So I'm sorry. Going back to what Duo said before, 538 has Shakhtar Donetsk as the 34th best team in the world.
I don't think Shakhtar Donetsk is.
Well, they have Club Bruges at 35. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to trust that completely. I'm still
sorry,
with the three of you.
Sorry, going down the list here. I'm going down the list.
Okay.
Here.
So wait, can I do my?
Yeah.
My stretches.
By the way, there are zero Brazil starters on that team. So there's like one guy who has 3 caps.
Yikes, we got deep in this one. I did not realize this
was the petty internet research was just ongoing during this whole
thing. I was going to say Liam Fraser is one of my stretches because of all the reasons Bobby talked about where you're like,
mostly a trunk decision for you?
Yeah, exactly. Like for me, it's like you have to go into a doctor's office, be analyzed physically, and then you're allowed to be considered a certain potential player who doesn't have that. But he searches the field a lot, which I get drawn into, and I like when he plays soccer. And then the other one is that I had Derek Etienne on my list at all. It's probably a stretch. But it was always going to happen.
That was the first.
We all knew that was going to happen.
Also, Jeremy Abobasi was my first name off.
For me, it was Paredes. He had, a pretty good first half of the year for Portland, and he's disappeared off the face of the earth. I did have Bofo Saucedo. I did have Frazier as well. In retrospect, like, I would take all three of those guys.
Yeah,
off
Bofo. Bofo, like, he got me with that real nice hot streak that he had. But that's, I mean, that's so indicative of these lists and this voting. Is like, you look back and you're like,
Look back. I mean, right now, Georgi Mihailovic would absolutely be on my list. Jackson Ewell would be on my list. I probably made a mistake in leaving both Efer Alvarez and Busio off my list. But, like, I mean, that's the thing. It's always in the eye of the beholder with this stuff.
Where'd you guys have Alvarez and Busio, if at all? I had Alvarez at 20, Busio at 22, Carlton at 21, and Reynolds at 19, which Dave correctly diagnosed as my, like, blocking.
Did you think it was Richards, the kid who's at – did you mistake Reynolds and Richards?
Yeah, Chris Richards and Brian Reynolds.
Deny till you die. Deny till you die.
Double
down.
There's no doubling down on
Brian
this one.
Brian Reynolds is like a U.S. youth's forward.
He was a forward, but they're converting him to right back.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was very confused earlier.
Yeah. Richards is really good. From what I've seen, he's one of those guys who, like, poor Ben.
That's his expertise.
Richards is going to be really good. There's a reason he's at Bayern Munich.
Right. Okay. I thought I was talking about Richards
me?
This whole time. I'm sorry. FC
you're
Dallas
never voting.
Players.
You're never voting again.
If you walk away from this episode with anything, understand that Brian Reynolds on Shakhtar Donetsk is the 34th best player in the world. That's all you need to know. All for 24 under 24.
Well, on that note,
I had Efra at 19, Busio not on my list.
Shakhtar Donetsk is a team with a bunch of, like, scrub tertiary Brazilians who aren't that good.
Andrew, can I ask the next question?
And then, like, the second string Ukrainian national teamers.
I'm sorry, but is Diego Valeri not a scrub?
They would be. Argentine? They would be the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference.
That back
no.
About Diego Valeri.
How many caps does Diego
we
Valeri
don't
have
say
in
that
his
out
career?
Loud, David.
I'm just saying.
We don't say that out loud. We
Piatti?
Andrew, can I ask a next question?
Yeah,
for
go for it.
Based on their general rankings and their general value in the community, whose stock would you buy the most of right now? So, like, Efra Alvarez has a lower stock and a higher upside.
You're talking about the young guns that haven't really produced
or
the
like,
MLS
well,
level
like
or
you
just
could,
overall.
You
anybody.
Could buy Alfonso Davies' stock, but then you're basically buying Apple stock, right? Like, it's already set pretty high. Yeah. Who knows how much it can actually grow based on where it is right now.
Who's that Blockbuster stock? One cent now, but maybe they'll be the next Netflix.
So, one off my list that I would put in there, one of you had them on your list, is Derek Jones.
Yep.
I think if he finds the right club, that he has the ability to be a game changer.
I think
do a lot
Philly's
of
the right club. I think he pushes,
I hope so.
I think he pushes Madunian in next year. Madunian is 34 now, and we saw what Houston. I mean, Houston destroyed him last week in the Open Cup. I think Derek Jones is a good bet, but the real answer to this is one of Busio, Alvarez, or Carlton. Mm-hmm. We just don't produce a lot of tens. We just don't produce a lot of tens.
So you're not no Brian Reynolds in that conversation.
no matter what position he's playing at for Shakhtar Donetsk.
He's a penny stock. People don't even know. They don't even know who he is at this point. I'm going to throw my penny stock out there based on, and maybe Jim Curtin like got me on this one, is Mark McKenzie, because I think I could buy pretty low right now, and there is a high that could come from that. I also would throw out Savarino, which I think he's chronically underrated by MLS fans. I have him at 4. And I think Brooks Lennon and Reggie Cannon – I think are in a very similar place right now as far as who they are as players, what they produce this year, and what they could be. Mm-hmm. I think Brooks Lennon could be a great right back for both MLS teams and potentially the U.S. national team.
I'll take Casetas, actually. Once Tyler Adams leaves, you have to figure they're going to funnel somebody else through the pipeline. The one game he played this year, he was very, very good. David Goss has given me that look for taking his RB2 swag.
Christian Casetas Jr. is the best player on the continent right now.
But you know what I'm saying? In part of this
list.
Yeah,
he's class. No, I agree with you. He is the Tyler Adams replacement on that team. He plays it in a different way. And for an 18-year-old, he like controls the ball on the field and will dominate games.
For better or for worse, when you think about this list, you have to be a little bit pragmatic. You have to think who has the pipeline to play. It's why I didn't put Andrew Carlton on my list. Because I'm not positive he's going to get a chance in Atlanta, especially in his prime development years.
Happy, like a high high ceiling, but a very low floor.
Yeah. Well, the flip side that's interesting about that, though, is Brooks Lennon, who at a younger point in his career is getting moved his position so he can become like a true right back.
Yeah, but Brooks Lennon has athletic gifts that Carlton doesn't.
But I'm just saying, in terms of not having a spot sometimes it's not the worst thing because Tyler Adams had to play wing back, which now is like in his repertoire and is something that other coaches can look at and might help him stay on the field in further points of his career because he had to do that as a young player just to get some playing time.
People out there talking about Brooks Lennon, because we got this reaction on the internet, are like, oh, Brooks Lennon, what? Like, you're talking about a guy who just turned 21, just, like, 20 days ago.
So is he 21 or 22?
That's a great question, and we will not have that debate here. You have a lot of burner accounts associated with Alex Mwiel. I did not know that, but I do now. 29 starts this year, 5 assists.
Yeah.
You know, like, guys that you look at and you're like, oh, you kind of, they lost their luster because we're so quick to move on. I'm like, oh, he didn't make it at Liverpool. Oh, he's not really an outside attacking winger in this league. Oh, but that doesn't mean he couldn't be a great right back, and he might already be. He might already be top echelon.
Again, considering that he's still learning the position, he's playing it every week, 90 minutes for a playoff team, and he has moments where you can, you know, find the space behind him, but that happens to just about every right back, every fullback in the modern game at one point or another. But we also see him have a lot of moments where he adds so much value going forward. David gave me a look when I said it happens to every fullback.
I just love the modern game.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me it doesn't happen to Shakhtar Donetsk right back.
It doesn't.
Shakhtar Donetsk takes over the conversation of 2222. Who would have thought it? The top 10 reveal is at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. MLS and Extra Time Radio channels, I assume you follow, if not some of them, all of them. 2 p.m. Eastern, again, 2 p.m. Eastern. Come hang out with us. We've got some interviews. We can't tell you with who, obviously, because that would be revealing the top 10. And 22 through 11 will be released on Wednesday. Check MLSsoccer.com for all that news, all the commentary, everything you need about Major League Soccer. We're going to go to break. On the other side, the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Radio driven by Continental into my favorite part of the show, the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS. Bobby, Dave.
You ready?
Matt.
Bobby, you ready to go?
Should I sit up?
Let's go.
You ready for the mailbag?
Here it is.
So.
Okay.
Mike from South Carolina, I've been wondering about this for a while, but what team would have benefited most from adding Bobby Warshaw to their roster this season? I would say Houston because he could have filled in for Cabezas, but what do you think? I'm really interested to know. What Bobby thinks.
I think you put him on Minnesota United and center back, D-mid, yeah. He could have gone back and forth there.
Yeah, either one of these teams that just could have used anyone to upgrade at center back, Galaxy, Minnesota. I think Galaxy would have been a good one.
Do you think you're a center back now? You've fully made the transition.
Well, then if you needed a cultural shift, if you need someone to come in and just kind of shore things up in the locker room, I could still play center mid, but I couldn't play for you.
How do you think he's done in the MLSsoccer.com locker room?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Have you shored up this locker room? Is that what's happening here?
I think Doyle got a little complacent, and I've kicked him in the butt.
Complacency
wow.
is
that's actually true.
Yeah,
that's
wow.
actually,
yeah, true. No, he's right about that one. He's
Doyle,
right
what team would you put Bobby Warshaw on?
I mean, just any of the worst teams in the league, obviously.
Yeah,
you know, he'll find his level.
Yep. That's fair.
All right. I think in Dream World, we put you with the Rapids so you can play with Jack Price.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's a double chip that the world would love.
Because they have these high-minded ideals that Bobby would identify with.
And the Rapids might pay me $500,000.
Whoa.
Do you have an accent?
Yeah. No champo.
You once got an Israeli passport. Maybe you get a Scottish one.
I know.
MLS for life here, Mike in Arlington, Virginia. Which higher-profile foreign MLS players would you most like to see stay in MLS in a coaching or front office role after their retirement? For example, I think Valeri has to be a Timber for life. I'd be interested to see BWP, a player who has praised the coaching he's received in MLS, stick around and pay it forward. And for the Galaxy, a team who's really lost their identity, wouldn't bringing Robbie Keane back in some capacity help?
You don't know how good a coach somebody is until you see them actually take on part of the job. You have an idea from having been around guys and seeing how they interact with their teammates. Valeri seems like a guy with coaching in his future. Maybe he's too nice for it, even.
Maybe he's an understated guy. He's not like a big, loud guy within their group, based on my understanding and just being around him. And I don't know if this would hold him back, but, yeah, I could see that. I mean, you have guys like – sometimes it's the underrated guys. It's like the Paolo Nakamura's, who you didn't pay a ton of attention to, but was actually the dude in that locker room who – in Bobby Warshaw fashion, raised the level and demanded something more and just had like this gravitas of respect that everyone paid him despite an undersized role, let's say, in like the headline making. Bobby, who for you, who is...
I was going to say Boniac Garcia, maybe, is somebody from that list.
Yeah, I like Boniac. Get him on a, you know, get him on a team and have him be kind of like the assistant coach that develops those young bucks.
Well, and he's basically doing it right now. Our colleague Kalen Carr speaks really highly of Boniac as well. Their paths crossed Houston back in the day.
I mean, Bastian Schweinsteiger, if you could, like, obviously, if you're taking your picks, like, you're going to...
I think like there's something about like guys who play that role in that way. Like Madunian is someone who popped into my head because, you know, he has to play such a cerebral game that like, oh, obviously he's going to be a good head coach, you know. But he also has the nice Slavic temper to add to it as well.
Patrice Bernier, who I think we're trying to get on for MLS Storytime. I know he's in the academy with Montreal. We're going to try to have him today, but it just didn't work out with timing as far as when he was going to be on the field and when we're doing our thing. I think he's a guy, if you're in Canada, if you're the Impact, that you're trying to develop into something bigger, something more important down the line. I
appreciate you not
Wando?
Answering the question, by the way.
What?
Foreign imports, and Patrice Bernier is from...
Is. You know, at that point, I had just thrown the prompt away.
All right, so let's move on to Robert from Athens, Georgia, who says, hey, y'all, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Tata not giving Chris Armas a handshake in case it wasn't in your rundown, which it was. Mm-hmm. This is coming from an Atlanta fan who loves Tata, but it seemed classless after Armas and company exposed us.
I'm down.
Thought that was a strong statement from a fan.
It is, yeah. I don't know if it's classless. I like it. I mean, I think it just adds more sauce to what is going to be a great, I hope, playoff.
It's got,
matchup.
As Terry Rozier would say, it's got drip.
Yeah, it's definitely got drip.
That has a lot of drip.
More of that, please.
Matt in section 129 at Red Bull Arena. Speaking of classless, I just want to make sure that you covered Matt Doyle doing a solid Ben Bear impersonation when he predicted a multi-goal win for Atlanta against the Red Bulls on Sunday. Boom, we already did that. Done. Second question is, who will be the coldest Western Conference team going into the playoffs after the next 3 to 4 games? It's obviously NYCFC in the Eastern Conference, so there's no point even talking about that.
Timbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Portland Timbers. I'm at the point right now where I don't even, like, Timbers fans come at me. I don't even really want to see them in the playoffs because they don't inspire me in any way right now.
3-6-2 since that 15-game.
In no way. Like, in what
ended.
What about them? Like, Diego, the magic of Diego Valeri has even been, like, quasi snuffed out. Like, what happened here?
I don't think they were as good as the results they were getting during that run, and I kept pointing it out to Timbers fans, and boy, did they not like it. But like, you can't rely upon winning one.
So Bobby saw you do that and was like, Seattle, I'm gonna do this now. This is gonna push Doyle.
Didn't Seattle win 4-0? Anyway, like, they weren't as good as their results, and eventually, you know, things sort of regressed to the mean, and that's what has happened in a big way for Portland. And then on top of that, look, Gio Savarese has made some really questionable decisions as a head coach, and the most questionable of them is pulling Diego Chara out of defensive midfield and shuffling off. Really, it is kind of like a shuttler role, whether they're playing the 4-3-2-1 or the 4-2-3-1 or the diamond, which they played this. They're pulling him off to the side and only giving him one half of the field to patrol, and that has hurt this team.
Yeah, they've been tinkering since that 15-game unbeaten streak, and I just want to be like, if you put Diego Chara at defensive center mid, and you put Diego Valeri anywhere on the field, you're going to make the playoffs. You know? Do less to get more on this one.
They probably still are going to make the playoffs. They have they're 4 points up over the 7th place Galaxy, and then, of course, 5th place Seattle and 6th place RSL between them. But they have that home and home with RSL coming up in the next couple of weeks.
That's got juice.
Yeah, it does,
or drip.
Man. Like, if
or jazz?
If RSL only take a point out of those, if Portland only take a point out of those, they're in some trouble.
Alfonso M here. FC Dallas being first in the West after selling Diaz and without a consistent goal-scoring forward, holy heck, Lamar has 8 in parentheses, is due to resurgent Matt Hedges and a savvy Reto Ziegler. Is that the best center back pairing?
No.
Is Long and Parker the best center back pairing?
I think so.
Yeah. Is that the two in the conversation?
No. Marshall and Kim Keehee has been really good.
Parkhurst, okay. LGP.
Yeah.
I mean, Sporting but Kansas is that a City's center back pairing? Ikopar and Matt Buser are like, yeah. Screw you guys.
But does Atlanta count if you're playing five in the back half the time?
Even if they were to play four in the back. They're probably better with four in the back.
I just want to point out that Dallas being atop the West still has less to do with Dallas and more to do with the guy like LAFC and Sporting Kansas City not really being able to click and play up to their potential, because Dallas is just 5-4-4 in their last 13 games. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Good enough, obviously, to keep them, you know, getting home field in the playoffs.
That
but
not
be
first
as,
but LA, LAFC loses to Chicago. Yep. Sporting KC draws at home against RSL in a game they had a ton of chances. They haven't exactly seized the initiative.
I don't think any of us in this room think that Dallas is the best team in the West. No?
No, probably not.
But wouldn't be shocked to see them win the West based on how they play and grinding out results.
Yeah. I would agree with that one. Here's my question. Judging by their social media presence, us interactions, and by the way they play together, how important has Kai Kamara been for the development of Davies? To have someone like that, an older and certainly experienced player close to you that you really seem to enjoy hanging out with, surely that must play a part in how good he's been. And if Kamara's had that effect on Davies, how much does that add to his value as a DP? If you put together his goals plus assists plus his help there, how does that bump him among DPs in the league?
That's kind of like our relationship, Bobby. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm obviously Kai here.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Yeah, sometimes what? A little bit too emotional for his own good and a little bit inconsistent, but capable of extreme brilliance at times. Kai Kamara is
that was like really heartfelt at the end right there.
Kai Kamara is he's an interesting character. I love Kai. I think he's amazing for this league. I think he's a great player. He has athletic abilities that I don't think anybody in this league and many professional sports can match. If there's one thing that Kai was able to give to Alphonso Davies, I hope it was the sense of just like utter self-confidence that Kai has when he's hot and feeling it, because once Davies got that, it felt like in games, once he became really decisive, once he became the player that when he got the ball, he said, this guy in front of me can't stay with me. I'm just going to take two touches, push it past him, and get in a good spot, and you better believe this could be a good cross. It just seemed like the belief grew and grew and grew, and of course that takes results, and it takes actually connecting those crosses and making those plays. But he had somebody in Kai Kamara who he could just dink the ball up to, too. So, like, Freddie Montero is a different story for Alphonso Davies as a setup man in this team, I think, and I think Kai Kamara more fit who he was at this time in his career. And to have a guy like that with that experience come and just like flow confidence through you, which it seemed like Kai did. He was just a cheerleader for Davies constantly. It's only a good thing.
Do you guys want to stick to Vancouver and move on?
Yeah, Vancouver's done, man.
Wow, okay. So, Toronto Duck.
Does this say, should the Whitecaps play a diamond? Move on.
No, yeah. I had a different one that I liked more.
Okay.
Toronto Duck, rate Friedel's first season.
D.
Poor. Yeah.
Like, no one has the same rubric.
Maybe an F.
And I think it's because we talked to him in preseason and we walked out of that conversation like invigorated about what he said he was going to try to do. And a lot of it revolved around playing young players, and a lot of it like just seemed kind of like, hey, all, you know, there's a lot of stodginess in this league, and I'm going to be a breath of fresh air. And just haven't seen that
the
or
guys
felt that.
That they signed. Go ahead, Bobby, your turn.
No,
the guys that they signed, other than Pena, mostly haven't panned out. They don't appear to be as good as the players that they were brought in to replace. And that includes Mancien, who they signed midseason, who is the highest paid center back in the league, $1.3 million. He has not been up to MLS speed. And then, so the signings have been bad. Obviously, they did a good job blitzing the teams the first month and a half of the season, and they were able to ride that for a good long while, but they never developed the ability to pass the ball. And, like, once teams, like, their press wasn't as good as the Red Bulls, once teams got some tape and were like, oh, we know how to play through this, then it was curtains for New England. And like, what sums it up to me, where it's like I look at it and I'm like, I'm not sure he has a plan or really knows what he's doing. He's playing Kellen Rowe at left back, and the only reason to play Kellen Rowe at left back is to say, all right, we're gonna have a ton of the ball because we value passing so much through the midfield. Our fullbacks are going to be able to get forward, provide extra value in the attack, and it's worth the defensive trade-off of playing Kellen Rowe at left back. And they don't value passing at all. They are the worst passing team in the league, and they have been that since day one. So it's like,
I'm going to take a different angle.
on the Revs right now. Just because when we came into the season, did we say that the Revs plan or hope to make the playoffs? No. We said that they need to do a total cultural change, that Brad Friedel is going to instill his personality, his type of locker room that he wants into that club. And guys, can anybody in this room say that they doubt that that is Brad Friedel's team and Brad Friedel's locker room? And his signings have been bad. At the end of the day, you need to put 11 players on the field, and that feels like it is now his team, and it's next year that we can judge. He did his 1A. He can check off the most important thing on his list. And I don't know how you call that a deal.
Quite honestly, I don't feel anything about the New England Revolution. So I don't know that I feel that.
Yep.
But seriously, no. But that's part of it. Like, you can have coaches who the team isn't great and you still find enigmatic, or you're interested in what they're doing. And I don't know that I felt that way about the Revs. Last one here. If a youth coach were to study game film from one MLS team this season, which should it be and why? And we close out on your philosophical takes.
So most of the stuff that you see in MLS – you could see in any good league in the world. If you're looking for, you know, how to play like Atlanta, there are teams around the world that play like Atlanta. What the Red Bulls did the first half of the season is the extent to which they press teams and eschewed passing the ball in favor of winning the ball, made the game all about 50-50s. I have never seen anything. I mean, they cranked it up to 11. And if you want to see something, I would not want my team to play that way. I think it was ugly, but it was so effective, and it was so different. And in a lot of ways, it was the closest thing to Moneyball in the real sense of the word that we've ever seen in this league. If you want to see something different, watch the first 15 games of the Red Bull season.
Yeah, it just kind of speaks to however you want to play, or like whatever makes your heart sing, right? If it's the Red Bulls, do the Red Bulls. If it's a different type of player you have, like maybe the Columbus Crew, maybe a different tweak on the Columbus Crew would be the Philadelphia Union. If you really want to go in the weeds and try and build something super complex, LAFC. And if you don't mind defending and you don't feel like you have the talent, the Portland Timbers or the Seattle Sounders when they're each on their unbeaten streak.
And Sounders fans are going to have something to say about that at 401-2060-MLS. That's it for us. Big thanks to Ben Bear for joining us for 22 under 22. Of course, Wednesday is when 22 through 11 come out, and then we release the top 10 on Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern on MLS channels. Thanks to Sam Stachel, and thanks to you guys. We're out of here. We'll see you later.